13. Tommy was standing in the hallway of the barn when Temple at last got the door of the crib open. When she recognized him, she was half-spun, leaping back. Then she whirled and ran toward him and sprang down, clutching his arm. Then she saw Goodwin standing in the back door of the house, and she whirled and leaped back into the crib and turned and leaned her head around the door, her voice making a thin sound like bubbles in a bottle. She leaned there, scrabbling her hands on the door, trying to pull it to, hearing Tommy's voice.
Lee says it won't hurt you none. All you got to do is lay down.
It was a dry sort of sound, not in her consciousness at all, nor his pale eyes beneath the shaggy thatch. She leaned in the door, wailing, trying to shut it. Then she felt his hand clumsily on her thigh.
Says it won't hurt you none. All you got to do is...
She looked at him, his diffident, hard hand on her hip.
Yes, she said. All right. Don't you let him in here.
You mean for me not to let none of them in here?
All right, I'm not scared of rats. You stay there and don't let him in.
All right. I'll fix it so can't nobody get to you. I'll be right here.
All right, shut the door. Don't let him in here.
All right.
He shut the door. She leaned in it, looking toward the house. He pushed her back so he could close the door.
It ain't gonna hurt you none, Lee says. All you got to do is lay down. All right, I will. Don't you let him in here.
The door closed. She heard him drive the hasp, too. Then he shook the door.
It's fastened, he said. Can nobody get to you now? I'll be right here.
He squatted on his heels in the chaff, looking at the house. After a while, he saw Goodwin come to the back door and look toward him, and squatting, clasping his knees, Tommy's eyes glowed again, the pale irises appearing for an instant to spin on the pupils like tiny wheels. He squatted there, his lip lifted a little, until Goodwin went back into the house. Then he sighed, expelling his breath, and he looked at the blank door of the crib, and again his eyes glowed with a diffident, groping, hungry fire, and he began to rub his hands slowly on his shanks, rocking a little from side to side. Then he ceased, became rigid, and watched Goodwin move swiftly across the corner of the house and into the cedars. He squatted rigid, his lip lifted a little upon his ragged teeth. Sitting in the cottonseed hulls, in the litter of gnawed corn cobs, Temple lifted her head suddenly toward the trap at the top of the ladder. She heard Popeye cross the floor of the loft. Then his foot appeared, groping gingerly for the step. He descended, watching her over his shoulder. She sat quite motionless, her mouth open a little. He stood looking at her. He began to thrust his chin out in a series of jerks, as though his collar were too tight. He lifted his elbows and brushed them with his palm and the skirt of his coat. Then he crossed her field of vision, moving without a sound, his hand in his coat pocket. He tried the door. Then he shook it.
"Open the door," he said.
There was no sound. Then Tommy whispered,
"Who's that?"
"Open the door," Popeye said.
The door opened. Tommy looked at Popeye. He blinked.
"I didn't know you was in here," he said.
He made to look past Popeye into the crib. Popeye laid his hand flat on Tommy's face and thrust him back, and leaned past him and looked up at the house. Then he looked at Tommy.
"Didn't I tell you about following me?"
"I wasn't following you," Tommy said. "I was watching him,"
jerking his head toward the house.
"Watch him, then," Popeye said.
Tommy turned his head and looked toward the house, and Popeye drew his hand from his coat pocket. To Temple, sitting in the cottonseed hulls and the corn cobs, The sound was no louder than the striking of a match, a short, minor sound, shutting down upon the scene, the instant, with a profound finality, completely isolating it. And she sat there, her legs straight before her, her hands limp and palm up on her lap, looking at Popeye's tight back and the ridges of his coat across the shoulders as he leaned out the door, the pistol behind him against his flank, wisping thinly along his leg. He turned and looked at her. He waggled the pistol slightly and put it back in his coat. Then he walked toward her. Moving, he made no sound at all. The release door yawned and clapped against the jamb, but it made no sound either. It was as though sound and silence had become inverted. She could hear silence in a thick rustling as he moved toward her through it, thrusting it aside, and she began to say, "Something is going to happen to me." She was saying it to the old man with the yellow clots for eyes. "Something is happening to me," she screamed at him, sitting in his chair in the sunlight, his hands crossed on the top of the stick. "I told you it was," she screamed, voiding the words like hot, silent bubbles into the bright silence about them, until he turned his head and the two phlegm clots above her where she lay tossing and thrashing on the rough, sunny boards. "I told you all the time."